Welcome everyone to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network, a celebration of all things fantasy, folklore, speculative fiction, and of course, science fiction.
My point was that many other anthropologists were trying to gather these many samples because, in their opinion, Puerto Ricans would very soon after the Spanish-American War stop being Puerto Ricans and become Americans.
On this episode of the podcast, I chat with Puerto Rican literary historian Rafael Ocasio about his latest collection, Folk Stories from the Hills of Puerto Rico.
These hills are not only places of contestation, but these are places in which traditions have been kept very strongly throughout many centuries.
So Rafael, bienvenido. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Gerald.
And thank you, Puerto Rico, and this text is a very special one for this episode and by extension the podcast, because at times we might forget that Puerto Rico is in the Caribbean because it's so politically connected to the US. The first thing I want to ask you is connected to that idea of Puerto Rico fitting in with issues of a regional Caribbean identity. Where do you see your role as a literary historian figuring into that with this collection?
With my collection, Folk Stories from the Hills of Puerto Rico, which is a bilingual collection subtitled Cuentos Folclóricos de las Montañas de Puerto Rico, I wanted to bring to the 21st century the folklore exploration that was performed on the island between 1914 and 1915 as part of the Scientific Survey of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. This was a large exploration of Puerto Rican geology, biology, geography, and it also included oral folklore. The oral folklore component was done under the direction of Dr. Franz Boas, who comes today as the founding father of American anthropology. Franz Boas was interested in the development of Puerto Rican folklore as it expressed culture. The stories that I gathered on my anthology are my favorite ones, are the ones that fully describe Puerto Rican folklore.
Let's talk about the introduction, because you mentioned Franz Boas mapping the island through not just the scientific survey, but also the folklore.
Yes.
So if I were to take the science in this podcast a little further, we can see how the science interacts with the folklore. So I want you to talk about the introduction for those who haven't read it as yet, as well as how the hills play into this idea for resistant space.
Prior to Boas's arrival, he had a field assistant come to the island to start preliminary preparations for his actual trip in 1915. His name is John Alden Mason, and he had been a student of Boas. I took a very political angle. I was very ideological charged with the investigation of why was Franz Boas so much interested in Puerto Rico and not any other Spanish-speaking country or any other island in the Caribbean. My point was that I think that Franz Boas, as many other anthropologists, were trying to gather these many samples because, in their opinion, Puerto Ricans would very soon after the Spanish-American War stop being Puerto Ricans and become Americans. In other words, they would lose Spanish, take English as their main language, and take on American ways of doing things. And that certainly has not happened. Puerto Ricans today, and I'm speaking about, of course, referring to the Puerto Ricans on the island, have a very strong Caribbean outset of looking at life, and certainly the literature, the formal and the informal literature, reflects ways in which Puerto Ricans see themselves as tropical agents, as inhabitants of a Hispanic Caribbean culture. Of course, my use of Hispanic, especially since we're recording this on October 12th, the so-called Día de las Razas, Puerto Ricans refer to as Columbus Day, has a very tainted and very specific ideological point. Our culture is, as we see it in modern times, has a very strong connection with Spain, given the fact that we were colonized by Spain. After all, Spanish or variant of Spanish continues to be the emotional and the official language of Puerto Ricans on the island.
You mentioned Columbus Day, and I actually didn't plan it this way, but it's a happy coincidence because we are in the midst of at least three interconnected celebrations. Today, Indigenous Peoples Day, colloquially, we're celebrating Caribbean Folklore Month in October. And of course, we're coming at the tail end of Hispanic Heritage Month. Now, let's take the folklore first, because these stories, in addition to focusing on folklore, folk stories, I'm also reading a bit of fabulous fiction in the sense of a sense of moral lessons being imparted and teachings being conveyed. So why is it important in this collection?
Oral folklore, by its own definition, its own primary definition of its function as part of a production by people, for people, that production has a very specific purpose. And the one specific purpose is to entertain while teaching a lesson. In the case of my collection, I will have to stress that these are my favorite stories. Some of these stories I heard as a child, or these are stories that I read as a child in school primary textbooks. I think the stories, as they were recopilated by Mason and Boas, for them, they were asking very specific questions to the people who either allowed Mason and Boas to transcribe themselves the stories, or what's more interesting for me as a literary historian, that many of these stories were actually written by school children in the public school system and by well-known storytellers. So what are the main subjects, themes, characters of these stories? These are stories that were predominantly inspired by life in the countryside, particularly in the Puerto Rican hills of the central mountainous range. Why are the hills so important? I agree with you, Gerald. These are places of literally contestation, political contestation. You are familiar with the Caribbean history, and we know that historically the hills in the Caribbean were places where runaway slaves found refuge. And also in the case of Puerto Rico, and I suspect very much in the case of the Caribbean island, there are places in which Creole, and I use this term to refer to activities or cultural practices that developed in the specific islands. These are places in which these practices are still very much enjoyed.
We're also, as I mentioned, having this discussion during Hispanic Heritage Month. So I really wanted to take this opportunity to ask you to connect the anthology with Puerto Rican issues of heritage, identity, history, and of course, literary appreciation.
In the hills of Puerto Rico, our most iconic character who inhabits these hills is called Jíbaro. The Jíbaro is the word we use in Puerto Rico to refer to people who have been born on these hills and have a very strong attachment to the land, as it will be the case in the Caribbean. These hills are not only places of contestation, but these are places in which traditions have been kept very strongly throughout many centuries. In the case of Puerto Rico, for instance, there is a genre called música jíbara, and it's very popular throughout the island. It's music that was born on the hills but are enjoyed by people elsewhere. The hills were traditionally dangerous places. The hills were also places where life was not that easy, and the characters that inhabit the stories reflect their lives' plights. These are characters, for instance, I can mention Juan Bobo, who is perhaps one of the most iconic characters for children in children's book. This is a boy, he can be a boy, he can be a young man, who is always trying to figure out how to survive these hills. He's trying to figure out how to literally make it financially and socially.
Can you say a bit more about the significance of Juan Bobo to the anthology's literary mapping of a Puerto Rican identity?
I certainly had to have Juan Bobo as a character in my collection. There is literally no anthology of Puerto Rican folklore stories that does not include one or two stories where Juan Bobo is the main character. Juan Bobo is today, as I mentioned, extremely popular. However, I think one of the reasons why Juan Bobo is also such a popular character among Puerto Ricans today is the fact that iconically he represents several things. So yes, Juan Bobo in its original format, I'm pretty sure, was a bad joke for a boy with learning what today we will call learning disability. Those stories are very frequently present in the Boas Mason collection, but I did not use them. The stories I used of Juan Bobo are stories that reflect, as I said, how the peasant had to fight the system, had to fight the environment, had to fight the foes in order to survive the hills. Whether he pretends to be Bobo, and again, the word Bobo here means it can mean dumb or it can be slow, but the stories I chose are stories in which Juan Bobo very much is a trickster, and he tricks his foes through practices that play on the fact that his foes believe that he is slow. It's almost like a joke is on you kind of story.
Another character who also stood out to me is Confersi. Confersi seems to be operating as more than just a Puerto Rican Robin Hood, if you will.
Yes.
So I'd like to say more about his role in the construction of a Puerto Rican space and mapping those hills.
Cofresí, or Roberto Cofresí, was a Puerto Rican-born pirate. His dates are 1791 through 1825. He was executed as a well-known and feared pirate. There are other figures very much like Cofresí of thieves, and the popular ones are thieves that rob from the rich and give away to the poor. Another character that I rescued, his name is Contreras, and it's the same story. Contreras was a very fierce thief, and he was well known for robbing and giving away his bounty to the poor. Now, in the case of Cofresí, what is very clear in several of the stories is that Cofresí stands out as very proud of having been born on the island of Puerto Rico. He was one who would literally fight for his honor. And there is a beautiful story in which there is a large narrated fight between Cofresí and a Spanish-born caballero, because the caballero had said something nasty about Cofresí's stature. Apparently, Cofresí was a very short guy. So that's the one part that stands out in the stories, how Cofresí was also this natural-born hero to stand against the Spanish conquistadores. Remember, I said that he was executed in 1825. However, what's also interesting about the stories of Cofresí is the fact that he also stands out as a supernatural hero. Even today, if you go to Cabo Rojo on the west coast of the island, you will hear many stories about buried treasures that have never been found. This, of course, ties up with the same legends that you will find all throughout the Caribbean. However, what makes these stories interesting is that the reason why the burial sites have not been found is that Cofresí had the supernatural help of the devil to be able to keep, to find good places to bury these treasures, and the ability that these places will never be found.
We've talked about Mango, but we've talked about Cofresí. One story overall stood out to me, and that was Juanito and the Son of the Donkey, particularly how the story ends with the important city in Puerto Rico, Ponce, being founded. How is that significant coming down to the end of the collection, but also overall?
Juanito, the Son of the Donkey, is part of a long series of other Juan or Juanito stories. It seems like Juanito was a very important name for the informants who either wrote or allowed transcription of these stories, because the name Juanito or Juan as a trickster is very common. This is a story that speaks about going south. The story moves away from the traditional storyline of conquistadores moving throughout the island and seeking foundation of the cities, to have Juanito, who leaves his family in order to find adventures. In his case, what's interesting, he was not looking for richness. All he wanted was to find a place in which no one knew him as the Son of the Donkey, but to be known as Juanito. Juanito eventually gets to the site of what today is the city of Ponce. He fights a giant and he liberates a bunch of people that the giant had kept, and these people founded Ponce. We know that this was not the way it happened. Actually, Ponce is named after one of the great-grandchildren of Juan Ponce de León, who was the conquistador of the island of Puerto Rico. Why would this story be so different from the original source? Why would not write a story about the actual founding of Ponce? It's very interesting, and I think that's the reason why you like it. Ponce, for instance, in common with San Juan, denies naming itself after the aboriginal people who had founded or who had inhabited that area. So the story comes across as a supernatural foundation of a city without that connection, a colonial history.
That story really clicked in terms of just emphasizing how spaces were constructed. So we've talked about my favorites, but I want to hear from you. Who is your favorite character, and what is your favorite story in this collection? One favorite.
My favorite, without doubt, is the series of stories that renamed Cinderella as Cenicosa. So if you're a Spanish speaker, you are recognizing that Cenicosa comes from cenizas, which means ashes. So Cenicosa is literally a woman who is covered with ashes. Why would she be covered with ashes? In the Puerto Rican countryside, the cooking was made outside using charcoal, and the people cooking, which of course I should say the women cooking, were often covered in ashes. The storyline is very much the same. Cenicosa is an orphan, very well loved by her father, but she misses having a mother figure. There is a woman and who is well known in the neighborhood as a mean woman, but Cenicosa doesn't see this. The woman has a daughter, and the woman eventually convinces Cenicosa to convince her father to ask him to marry her. It's a complex storyline. The woman starts feeding Sani Sosa what the stories refer to as sopa de miel, honey soup. Eventually, the father marries this woman. The woman turns out to be a very mean stepmother. Now, what's interesting of the rest of the story is that Sani Sosa is a Jibara peasant girl, and she is being given all of these tasks that are proper of the Puerto Rican countryside. One of the tasks is that she has to wash in the river the tripes that will be made into soup. What happens is that the tripe, one of the pieces of tripes, goes into the river. She is panicking because the mean stepmother asked her to be very careful because she knows exactly how much tripe she has, not to lose any of it. She gets very upset. She follows the tribe. The tribe comes into a subterranean cave that is inhabited by these four godmothers who are called encantadas. These are enchanted women. They're never referred to as fairy tale what is the word in English? Fairy godmothers. They're referred to as encantadas. The encantadas give fabulous gifts. Actually, they're not gifts. They are fabulous abilities to produce richness, including a magical wand, which is called Varita de la Virtud, a virtuous wand. And I won't tell you the rest of the story so you can read what are the supernatural abilities that Sani Sosa receives from these women when she goes back to the stepmother. What I like about these stories is, of course, you are not hearing my mentioning that there is no prince. The stories contain no princes at all, and I like that very much.
We haven't talked about the fairy tale aspect, which is very prominent, so it's good that you brought that up. Rafael, we've come to the end of the chat, but anything else, any final words for our listeners about this collection, about Puerto Rico?
I would hope very much that my readers, whether you are Puerto Rican or whether you are from the Caribbean basin or whether you're not, whether you are just interested in reading about folk tales, understand that these are stories that are still very powerful in the sense that they are commonly reused as formal literary pieces, or that they are still sources of entertainment, both for children and adult. In my anthology, Folk Stories from the Hills of Puerto Rico, what I tried to do was to put together stories that are still very much part of the Puerto Rican oral folklore tradition, a tradition that celebrates Puerto Ricans because we are a component of a large Latin American community, and particularly Caribbean, in the sense of all of the cultural traditions we share and we celebrate in common.
Thank you so much, Rafael, for doing this. As I said, it's an important aspect to include all the islands, as many islands in the Caribbean, and Puerto Rico is certainly one of them. And it resonates not only geographically in terms of the podcast, but also in the content of this collection. So I'm very happy that you were able to make it.
Thank you, and thank you again.
And thank you everyone for listening. Continue to stay tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.